Welcome to Classic 4x4, the podcast for classic four-wheel drive collectors, restorers, and enthusiasts. I'm your host, Chris Piccone. You can follow the podcast on Instagram at Classic 4x4 Podcast, and you can follow my trials, tribulations, and escapades of collecting, restoring classic four-wheel drives at Overland by the Sea. Today we have a very interesting guest. He's a fabricator, a builder, a restorer of classic Dodge trucks, and most people would consider him and put him at this level as the premier classic Dodge truck restorer, builder, and fabricator in the country. So, little interesting fun fact with our guest today is we actually have a common celebrity connection too, which we'll talk about on the podcast. So, without further ado, I want to introduce Charlie Pitcher. Charlie, many of you know him as Metal by Charlie. You can follow him on Instagram at Metal by Charlie or on the web at his website, Metal by Charlie. Charlie, man, thank you so much for joining us today.
Hey, thanks for inviting me.
I'm very excited to talk about not only projects that you have in process, but also some projects you've done and the cool stuff you're going to do in the shop going forward. So we talked a little bit about that. And I am also want to touch base on one unique thing, which is a build that you did for a common friend of ours. And I use the word celebrity very lightly. So because that build is just absolutely epic. That's the only thing, that's the only way to talk about that build. So Charlie, before we get started, I always want our listeners to know the man behind the welder, the roller, and the man behind the Dodge truck collection. So where are you from? Where do you live? And how did you get into collecting, restoring, building, and fabricating, you know, Dodge trucks?
I just turned 28 in July, and since I was a kid, my dad was more of a backyard hobbyist. So we were mainly gravitating towards Mopar-related vehicles, cars, and trucks. My earliest memories growing up, we had a 69 Dodge D200 pickup that was just rotted into the ground, but it got us through the winter and hauled firewood. And then from there, as I grew older, time to get my driver's license, I started looking for a project vehicle. So from there, I got into the 70s Dodge trucks around 2010. They were pretty affordable. I've been running down here in Southeast Pennsylvania doing that. And we've been working hard for about 10 years now in this shop I rent, and finally got two employees under me now. So we're getting a lot of stuff done lately.
That's super cool. Interesting fun fact I like to ask everybody is, what was your first car?
So my first truck, I really wanted to get a 68 Dodge Dart or Plymouth Barracuda. But at the time I had like $3,000, I was 15 years old, and I could buy a rusty Hulk but not afford to restore it. So I started getting into the trucks. And a couple of years earlier, my dad had just done a Cummins turbo diesel swap on a 77 Dodge Army truck. And I remember, you know, helping him do that and seeing the costs involved. And I realized, like, this is an obtainable goal for me as well. So I ended up buying a 77 Dodge Army truck and actually got a package deal of two of them. I think I paid $800 for the pair of them. And one of them was like the body donor, and another one had like the mechanical bits I needed. And I put the two in the one and then found myself a cheap Cummins donor truck. And it was like a 6-month project after school nights. And I started driving it about a month after I got my driver's license.
Dude, so I had super, that super cool
all junior year of high school. I had it. And then halfway through my senior year, I sold that truck. I wouldn't say I regretted selling it because I did pretty well on it money wise, at least for what I thought at 16 years old. And, it definitely, opened the door to more opportunities. And that's one of the things that helps me sell vehicles is I always wonder what opportunity I'm going to miss if I don't sell it. So I wanted a 4-door truck, something with more cab space. And I decided to go that route and I sold the Army truck, and, it's up in Long Island now. And that's actually how I met our our acquaintance, Frank.
No way,
so,
man.
Yeah. So I sold that truck to a guy named Steven out on the South Fork. And one day I went out to visit him and do some tinkering on the truck. This was 3 or 4 years after I sold it to him. And Frank was there. And I sat down and had some food with Frank, and we started talking trucks. So here we are today with a truck we built, and many more to come.
That's super cool, man. Yeah, we'll definitely talk about Frank's project that you did for him and who he is for a little bit later in the podcast. My other thing I like to ask everybody is, like, what do you have in your collection right now? You know, I'm assuming it's all Dodge trucks, right? But what do you have? What's your daily driver right now? I'm assuming it's a classic Dodge truck. And what other ones do you have laying around the shop that are yours that you're not going to sell that are just yours?
Well, I'll definitely get some flack for my daily driver not being a Dodge truck at the moment. But I do tend to drive a Dodge truck quite regularly. It's just I try to keep the miles off them, and I don't like driving them in the rain or the snow. So I have a Volkswagen turbo diesel station wagon, and that does all my parts hauling and gets good fuel mileage, something to run around in. But lately, I have a 69 Dodge Camper Special pickup, and I'm using that 2-3 days a week. Usually all weekend I'm driving that truck around. I really enjoy driving it. And so I have a 69 Dodge Camper Special. We just made that truck a four-wheel drive back in May. It was originally a two-wheel drive, big block truck with a nice host of options. We had air conditioning from the factory, power steering, power brakes, interior upgrade, and it had all of its original paint and minimal rust. So it was kind of like a nice project for me to find. I drove it home from Alabama, sight unseen. It was probably one of the most enjoyable trips I've ever done in an old vehicle. It definitely helped having the highway gears too. The only thing I didn't like about it was two-wheel drive and it had drum brakes in the front. So you never knew which way you were going to go if you hit the brakes.
Pulling right, pulling left.
Yeah. So it had a mind of its own. And I tried messing with the brakes a few times, and I'm usually really good at drum brakes, but these were definitely more on the finicky side. And I always gravitate towards the four-wheel drive, one-ton Dana 60 disc brake platforms. And I decide, well, shoot, let me just go get a donor truck and I'll swap the parts. And about a month of strategizing and, you know, acquiring parts, we got everything and we swapped it in a weekend. And I've been driving that. I probably put 3,000-4,000 miles on it now.
Original motor?
Yeah, it's a 66,000 miles on the original 383 big block.
Dude, that's super cool, man.
It gets like 10 miles a gallon, but
but that's what's fun about it, right?
Yeah, it's fun.
It's funny you talk about going and flying somewhere and picking up a car. Like, you had a good experience. I actually had I love it too, until I had a really bad experience. I bought my CJ8 Scrambler. I bought an 81 CJ8 Scrambler a couple of years ago as a project. And, you know, I had a conversation with the guy. We went inside and out, upside down on the thing. And it was clean. It was really clean. But it was about 2 hours north of Burlington, right on the Canadian border at this guy's hunting camp. So okay. I flew into Burlington, Vermont. He picked me up. We go up to we drive about 2 hours north, which Burlington, Vermont's already pretty north. You go 2 hours further north and man, you're like, you're literally right on the Canadian border. I think he was like something like, I don't know, hundreds of yards from the Canadian border. So we get up to this hunting camp. I see it. I'm like, oh, this is great. And I'm going to drive this thing back to New Jersey. I live in coastal New Jersey. And I'm like, all right, I can do this. Not bad. This is like the end of April. And next thing you know, I get on the road and it just starts snowing.
Oh, snowing. No.
And I'm talking like a blizzard snowing. So I pull over, lock the hubs, put the Dana 300 in four high, like, okay, I'm better now. Next thing you know, man, the wiper linkage went. So I don't have any wipers at this point. All right? So it is blizzard snowing out. Thank God my family lives in Lebanon, New Hampshire, which is about 90 miles south of where I originated. And I made it 90 miles in this thing with no linkage, no wipers, with my head out the window, driving it down 91 south. So I will never do that again. And I will pay for transport at every cost. No matter what. But the next day when it was nice out and it was warm, it was fun as I came down further south. Other than that, other than the stuff that you drive, what projects you working on right now? What's in the shop? You definitely have some cool stuff.
Oh yeah, the shop's pretty tight right now, and winter's coming, so I'm like, okay, well, we gotta make sure we have some space to work because they can't go outside during the day anymore. Especially with snow on the ground. I usually like pull out two or three vehicles every day to make some workspace. And currently, I have one of my own projects that's been on the floor here. I haven't touched it in a few months just because of the customer work. That's a 65 Dodge crew cab that we did a frame swap on with a Cummins turbo diesel, later model common rail electronic fuel injected. And I built that engine myself, and it's got compound turbos and a 6-speed trans. It's kind of the holy grail of how I'd want to have a towing vehicle. So that truck's probably going to come back up in the some work circulation pretty soon. Besides that, we've been going really heavy. We have a 65 Dodge D100 pickup that has had substantial metalwork done to it. These 60s era trucks, they were never primered. They were never dipped and galvanized. They were just raw steel welded together. So any interior cavity will rust. And doesn't matter where you get it from, out in the desert, they're still going to have surface rust out there. And you may think that a Western truck is the answer, but as soon as you bring it back to an Eastern climate, give it a couple of years and you're right back to an East Coast vehicle condition.
And I think it's very important for our listeners to know that, you know, when you're talking about these panels, these body panels that you have to replace, you know, certain pieces of suspension components, like these aren't readily available, like repop, right? This is stuff that you're fabricating in your shop, right?
Yep. There's a huge wild goose chase. Pretty much every part of the build, you're looking for a part and nobody makes it. And you have to come down to an option of, okay, how many hours does it take to make the part from scratch? Or do I call this person in Washington State and freight ship a cross member or a fender or a door? And then you're always gambling with the true condition of the part when it shows up. Is it really what they described it as? Does the shipper damage it in the process? So that is the biggest hurdle with every project is the parts and the condition of the parts we get. So the 65 D100, that was a local guy's truck, and he brought it here like 3 years ago, just drove it over, had me look at it, and I crawled around it. Somebody had already done patchwork on it and painted it, had a lot of body filler, and I could tell. And I told him, I was like, we need to find another body for this truck if we're going to do it. So I said, we'll keep contact info. We'll stay in touch. I'll start searching. And small world, he has a son that lives in Nevada, and he went out to visit his son about 3 or 4 months later. He was driving down the road, and he saw a guy that had a bunch of 60s Dodge trucks in his front yard. What I didn't know was it was my friend Cord Higby from Nevada, and he was at my friend's place in his front yard asking him if he wanted to sell the trucks that we owned together. So... He's like, well, these aren't for sale. This truck belongs to my friend in Pennsylvania. And he's like, oh, really? That's where I'm having the truck worked on. And they struck it off and they realized that they're talking about the same person, which is hilarious. And they ended up finding a donor truck right there across the street from where my buddy's place is. And they set it aside and I went out there and took it apart for him. So this was over the course of a year and a half of trying to just stage out even starting a project. And finding the pieces that might be better shaped than what he currently had, and then shipping everything back. So we ended up doing, we have a cab, doors, front fenders, and rad support from out west. And they were better than what he had, but they still had rust. So we still had to cut everything apart and remake almost all of the cab. And I guess what it comes down to is you could say, well, you know, this part is not terrible, but everything that it connects to either needs to be worked or replaced. And then you realize, well, let's just do that piece too, because it kind of takes away from the quality of the whole component if you don't do all of it. And the problem is anytime you have like two layers of metal that are welded together and overlapping each other, the rust will creep right in that seam and they start swelling and buckling. And when you see that, it's just a ticking time bomb. And I was looking all over the trucks. I was like, let's just drill the whole thing apart and start over.
That is definitely going down a rabbit hole, man.
Yeah. So we made the floor pans in the truck, left and right floor pans. We made the left and right cab mount supports. We made the inner rocker panels, the outer rocker panels. And then a lot of the 60s trucks and cars, I'm sure you know, the cowl panel has like these fresh air vents for your like floor feed area.
Yeah.
And so they had these like vents in front of the windshield that, and it was supposed to let the air come down. And it was supposed to let the water drain away and out the sides of the vehicle. Well, that never works. And they rust out. And next thing you know, it's raining inside the vehicle. So we took all the cowl apart. We deleted the fresh air vents. And the condition with the customer was if I'm deleting the fresh air vents, we got to put air conditioning in it, which I thought was a fair trade-off. So that now the truck has no fresh air cowl venting. It still has the exterior cowl that looks the same, but there's no fresh air vents that could leak water on the inside. It's all been flushed out and removed. So it's a huge process to drill all that apart. And the whole time you're worried about parts moving and not lining up when you're going back together. So you have to brace and put a bunch of supports into the cab just so it stays in its shape as you cut half of it apart. It's very daunting. Like right now we're in the fitment stage of putting all these repaired parts back on and seeing how close we were with all this work. And so far it's been pretty well. It's looking really nice.
So you're just at the cab section. You haven't even started on the bed yet.
It's funny. Yeah. So the bed's actually right behind me. You might be able to see it, but so the bed, we took the sides off the bed, and that was another toss up as to, do we fix the bed he brought us or do we get a Western bed? And we decided to fix his current bed, and it had all the seams were swelling up. The floor had little bits of issues. So we ended up drilling everything apart and replacing all four corners of the floor, the whole rear cross member on the bed. The wheel tubs are pretty hammered and dented up from use, and all of the flanges on the wheel tubs are rotted off. So we have 3 weeks in the bed now, just of metalwork. And
this is all stuff that you fabricated in your shop. You and your guys fabricated in the shop.
Yep.
That is wild, man.
So I've got both my guys up to speed with TIG welding now. So we're an army over here, and the three of us, we can do a whole week on one vehicle and make some serious progress that would take me months otherwise.
That's great to hear, man.
Yeah, it's great to see it happen. Like, I'm looking at the bed now, and short of sandblasting it, it's ready for epoxy primer. So it's pretty exciting to see it that quick.
That's cool. You know, one of the other cool things I think you're doing right now is, you know, as you, you know, design these parts and fabricate a lot of these parts, there are other guys out there that need them too. So you're selling these custom fabricated parts on your website, which is so if anybody needs custom fabricated classic Dodge truck parts, you know where to go to your website. I don't think there's anybody doing it to that level. So that's, again, super neat. I love the fabrication aspect of your builds and your restorations. That is – and the attention to detail is also second to none.
Thank you. Yeah, the big thing with the custom parts we're making now, a lot of the custom parts that we're selling on the website are more mechanical-based parts, so chassis components, engine components, transmission components, just to help you do a swap or adapt something that's not exactly OEM, or maybe a hard to find original OEM part that we can either upgrade the design of or fabricate in house. I'd love to do more sheet metal parts. The problem with sheet metal is a lot of it requires tooling that, you know, needs a large press to stamp the part. And I don't have the equipment to do a large stamping. I can make floor pans with the equipment we have, and I can do some nice floor pans, but getting into doing rockers in mass production or cab mounts, right now we do them by hand. It's very time consuming, but we wouldn't be able to stamp 100 of them out right now. I'd love to, but we're not quite there yet.
That, hey, someday when the shop gets a little bit bigger. But one project and build that you did, already alluded to, we talked about the fact that we have a common celebrity connection, and you built the Green Machine for the one and only Frank Falsinelli, who, for those of you that aren't familiar with Frank is a, again, loosely using this word, celebrity chef, restaurateur in New York City, has had a slew of restaurants. I eat his food a lot. And even if he wasn't my cousin, I will tell you, I would still eat his food. It's absolutely amazing.
And, oh, yeah.
And the vibe in his restaurants is just amazing. Him and his partner, who is also named Frank, and which is why almost all the restaurants are Frankie something. Frankie's 457 Spuntino, Frankie's Wine Bar. So they do an amazing job. But talk to me about how you met Frank, and then how it came to the point where you started building the Green Machine for him.
So I met Frank through that guy I sold my first truck to. And I guess that was kind of that opened a lot of doors for me, because when you collect vehicles, you get an attachment to a certain vehicle. You say you're never going to sell it. And that kind of removed that from my way of thinking, because I realized, well, you don't know what could happen down the road. If you sell that vehicle, or I wouldn't say sacrifice it, but you give it a chance to leave to present a new opportunity. So I sold that green truck, and the opportunity I got out of that was my first large customer, which was Frank. And we were friends at first, you know, going back and forth, talking about, you know, ideas and what kind of trucks to build. And we started looking for a potential project. And he wanted a diesel. He wanted a Cummins diesel truck. So I set off looking for a donor truck. And we found a cheap Cummins donor truck. It was funny. My roommate in college, his dad is a operator. He might be the owner of one of the largest scrapyards on the New York metropolitan area. And he gets a lot of fleet vehicles in, a lot of township vehicles in. And I had a pretty good connection for some years while this stuff was coming in cheap. And since then, it's not as common anymore to get scrapped out. But I was buying a lot of my Cummins diesel donor trucks out of the northern part of New York City. So Frank and I bought this Cummins diesel donor truck, and we started looking for a potential candidate to put the powertrain into. And he likes the color green. A lot of his products he makes have either a green color to the can, but it's an organic color. It's, you know, leaves and foliage. So yeah, it kind of
Frank definitely likes organic green foliage. There's no question there.
So we went with green, and that all started. I found a cool little truck my friend had over in Central PA, and it was a light metallic green 79 Dodge pickup, and it was a factory color called Teal Frost. And I guess the mistake we made was buying a truck based on its color, not so much the condition. But at the time, from the surface, it looked like it was a pretty solid truck. It looked like it just needed floor pans. It looked like, you know, it was a very good candidate to build from, and the price was cheap. So we went out and bought it. I was pretty satisfied with it. And, you know, it's one of those things, the longer you look at it, the more you dig into it, you start to realize, you know, there's a little bit more going on here than what we initially thought. And so we didn't really start on the project for a year or two. And then we got a plan together, and I started taking stuff apart, and we decided to do the four wheel drive. And I said, well, let's try out my coilover spring design again. And I guess it was a lot at first, because he was trying to let me, you know, go off and build something as extreme as I could at the time. We never really could nail down a budget. It was like, kind of like, let's see how far we can go. And then it's like, okay, maybe that's a little too far. Let's try to speed this up and not go that far on this part. But it turned a lot into me just trying to see how far I could go. And if it required a couple extra hours of my time to get that final result, I was okay with that. It was a learning experience. And we ended up doing like a full one ton powertrain. And I found a frame out in Texas. I did my first road trip out west, and I found a frame out in Texas for the truck, which was like the ultimate chassis you want to build off of. It was the thickest frame, the tallest rail. So, like, you know, a really clean Western truck frame to build from. And it was fun just to kind of show them, you know, text message detail shots of what I was working on as we went. And right about the time COVID started, the truck was in its original paint that I got it in. There was no floors in it. Nothing was sandblasted or painted. It was basically just bolted together, rolling, mocked up. The engine was done. And COVID hit. And I was like, Frank, I want to like get this truck done. I know you have restaurants. Like, where are you at money wise? Like, can we get this thing done? Like, I'm not doing anything else right now. Like, I want to just jam this thing out. And I was at that point, like, I'd work a little bit ahead of it just to try to make some good progress.
Yeah.
And I hit that thing hard for, it was probably 6 months. I was doing 40, 50 hours a week on that thing. Wow. And we were by August of 2020, that thing was, that thing had the cab and bed painted, and we started hammering on it back in like March of 2020. So it was 3 or 4 months of solid fab work, pulling bedsides, making floors. It was nuts. I couldn't believe we got all that done in that amount of time.
It definitely took 40 to 50 hours a week. I mean, cause I've seen that truck, and it is the attention to detail down to like the cup holder that comes out of the trans shifter bezel, like what, like, and oh, by the way, that shifter bezel is custom made and custom fabricated by you. And like, it is wild. Like, let's tell our listeners what the truck is, because I think it's a 70 D100, right?
79 D100. It's the last year that body style was 1980. So those last 2 years, they look very similar. That truck, it's a conventional cab long bed, and there's no trim on it. It's just clean, straight lines, classic look. The last year, there's a hood on it called a bird bath hood, and they call it that because it collects water, but it has a very nicely shaped top to it. And the last year for the bird bath hood was 78, I think. So we ended up putting that hood on the 79 model year truck. And it just... between that and the wheels and the hubcaps we use, everything looks very classic. And with a fresh coat of that original teal frost, it just looks so good in the sunlight, the way that the color flops off the body lines and the contours. And we didn't do the clear coat as a gloss. We did it as a semi-gloss flat clear. And I guess I wanted to do that because the flat clear holds up a little bit better to use. It doesn't show scratches as easy. And, you know, we see the restored vehicles now, and everything's shiny, like reflection quality paint. And when you would buy one of these vehicles back in the day, it was never like that. You wouldn't be able to comb your hair in the door skin, and like, you know, you wouldn't be able to do that. So I was trying to like I was trying to make it look like it was not restored by doing a flat clear.
Which is super cool. I mean, it looks absolutely like $1 million. What powertrain's in that truck?
So, the Cummins donor truck was a 1990, which was the second year Dodge offered the diesel. And I particularly liked the early Cummins trucks because they were more of an industrial engine. They're a little more powerful right off the bat. So we did the Cummins engine. We didn't do a full rebuild on it. I just took it apart, cleaned it, redid the gaskets and seals, did the cylinder head, the valve train, and went through the fuel system with a fresh turbocharger. And it's obviously it's fresh coat of paint. Everything's detailed up, new injector lines. And it's nothing crazy for horsepower. It's about 300 horsepower. But the idea was to have something reliable that got decent fuel mileage. And just around town, I'm getting 19 with it. So that's pretty respectable for an old truck that weighs 6,300 pounds.
And it has your custom fabricated coilover suspension in it, right?
Yep. So that was the first truck that I did a bolt-on coilover tower setup off of. So that all started off of my first, the second truck I built after I sold my first one was that 85 Dodge crew cab four-door. Mm-hmm. And that's like my test mule. I kind of did a bunch of wild stuff to that truck to see how it'd work out. And all the suspension on that is very similar to what Frank's truck is. But at the time I was 19 years old, and I was just buying what I could find and welding and fabricating everything right to the chassis. The problem with that is if you ever want to change it, you're stuck with whatever you welded on your frame without a lot of heavy work. So I wanted to do something that was more user-friendly, so I decided to do like a bolt-on coilover tower, a bolt-in cross member to hold the control arms, and then of course the axle brackets have to be welded on, but that's not a huge issue. So I used his truck as kind of like the first subject to this three-link swap, and I ended up doing the coilover towers. I think I did everything by hand, which really sucked. So I made all the brackets and towers by hand, just with a plasma cutter, bandsaw, drill press, just to try to see how things would go together. And I got it to roll and, you know, sit in my shop on its own weight. And it was enough for me to be like, okay, this should work. Let me pull measurements off this now. So then I took all that information and I downloaded this program called Autodesk Fusion 360. And it's like a monthly subscription CAD program. It's like $60 a month. And it's not like SolidWorks, but it could still get the job done. So I started drawing all these parts in CAD. And at the time, I made a new connection with a local laser cutting shop. And I was really surprised they were okay with doing, you know, one or two pieces at a time versus large batch quantities that everybody kind of does in production. So I was able to, you know, send a file and be like, hey, can you cut one of these? And a week later, I'd go pick it up. And I think I cut like 14 coilover towers. Just I'd have like one or two cut, press break them, test fit them. Like, hey, you know, let's move that a quarter inch this way or eighth inch that way. And finally, I got a set of towers I liked that fit, and they did what I wanted to do. So that suspension went through multiple trial and errors. And then finally, we had that set up pretty nice. And I drove it. I was thrilled with it. And then since then, I've done three more of those coilover setups on trucks here. Mm-hmm. And I've kept changing and tweaking and fine tuning things. And now Frank's truck, I'm going to swap the coilover towers again on it. So
no way. Yeah.
It's like, it's real nice, but I changed the steering geometry a little bit. And it's going to be even better.
That's so cool.
Yeah. I'm very excited to do that.
Word on the street is the green machine is for sale. I guess that's what happens when you go from being a bachelor to a happily married man. When your absolutely lovely wife is probably not the hugest fan of driving around Brooklyn in a Cummins diesel 79 D100 pickup truck. Is it still available?
Yeah, I think there's a multitude of factors of why he decided to sell it. Between expanding his business and getting married and the fact that storage is limited for a truck of that size in Brooklyn. And I don't know if you've ever tried driving a one ton truck down the streets of Brooklyn, but it's not enjoyable.
No, so it looks cool though.
It looks awesome. And it's in that habitat. But I think for where he lives, you know, he's better off in maybe a Jeep or a BMW 2000 series car, something that's a little more zippy and agile on the narrow streets, you know. So
he's actually in a Toyota Highlander right now, by the way. I put him in a Toyota Highlander Platinum. It's sick. I mean, it's a brand new Toyota Highlander Platinum is the new family car. We'll call it the new family car.
Well, he definitely rolled the red carpet out for me when I brought the truck up to him the first time, and I got there at like 1 o'clock in the morning. And because I don't like driving around the city during the day. So I waited till nighttime to drive up. And I parked that thing out front of the 457, and there was cones marked out for the truck. And I pull up and I'm realizing the cones are only the length of the truck. There's no extra space to parallel park this thing. So there's one of his employees is out there watching me, and I'm moving the truck back and forth like 8 inches at a time to try to wiggle it in the spot, you know? So I got it parallel parked, and I was thinking to myself, I don't know if this truck's going to fit in this environment. Like, it looks awesome here, but you can't drive it around here.
It's cool though, man. I got to tell you, the one thing I was the most surprised about in a very good way is when he put it up for sale, it's only $129,000, which is crazy to say only $129,000, but
it's a lot of money, but for what it is, it's not.
For what it is not a lot of money at all. I thought he would put, when he first started talking about, hey, I think I'm gonna get rid of it, I don't think I can, it's feasible for me anymore and where my life's at. And I was like, man, what are you gonna put it up for? Like, you know, 150, 175, like. And he's like, I don't know. I think 129 works. I go, 129. Wow. You know, I think you agree. There's a lot more than 129 of value in that truck.
Yeah. I mean, the way I see it is it's kind of like a pony vehicle, you call it, where it's one of the first, you know, that we've done. So I don't want to like be too exclusive in who I'm selling the vehicles to yet. I kind of want to keep getting my name out. Mm-hmm. So I'm hoping I could grab someone that maybe doesn't have that superstar budget, but still likes the vehicles. So if I can find someone that can afford a truck of that caliber at that price, it might be able to get my foot in the door for maybe some of their friends that have the bigger budgets that we need to work with now.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And you know, it's the other thing is, you know, the way things are now is everybody's got family and dogs, and I could see a bigger price if it was an extended cab or four-door truck. Because that's what a lot of people go for now. So regular cab, it kind of hurts the big dollar value, but I think at 129 for the amount of work that's done to it, it's a very fair price.
No, fair is not even the word. I mean, and we can say that because we've put eyes on it and we see how, you know, the little details, you know, I keep talking about this cup holder that comes out of it, like the shifter bezel. Like, but I thought like when I saw that truck and he just like popped it open, I was like, that is the coolest thing I've ever seen. What other little like little nuggets did you put in that truck?
I'll give the guy that made the cup holders a little plug. His name is, his Instagram is Santana Interior Design, just like Carlos Santana, the guitar player. But that's his name, Santana. So he CNC machines those cup holders, and they flip out and drop down, and they're really low profile, sleek cup holders that don't have a lot of depth, so you can hide them into these tight areas of your interior that normally would not have the space for a cup holder. And that was one of those things that that was a back and forth with Frank for months, as I bought stainless cup holders I usually use in my vehicles and make a console for it. And we just couldn't get it to look right. I mean, it was just too bulky, or it was going to be in the way of your knee, or it would be on the door and then the drink would be falling out. It just, nothing worked. So I needed something that you could hide and then use when you needed it. And that's where the Santana cup holders came into play. The other things we did, little touches, we did a Bluetooth sound system in that truck, and the original ashtray for the dash, I converted that into the spot to hide the control unit for the Bluetooth.
No way.
So you flip the ashtray down and you have your little receiver there with your play pause button and your sync button and your forward skip button. It's just real, real compact little unit. And then you can flip it up and you don't even see a radio in the dash. Another couple things we did, the bed has its own LED lighting hidden under the bed rails. So the factory cargo light switches on the dash, and you pull that and it lights up the entire underside of the bed, so you don't have to use a flashlight at night, which I really like. Couple other little touches I'm thinking of. The front bumper, we flushed out some, we Frenched in some front fog lights in that bumper. And I found some nice LED, they're like 3.5-inch round lights, and we made we took a piece of 1/8-inch steel and rolled it into a circle that matches the light diameter, and I cut a hole in the bumper and I flushed it into the back of the bumper and, you know, radius the edge, so it looks really organic and original, and the bumper's now powder coated. It looks like it's factory. So yeah.
I don't think you could build that truck again for, you know, 120.
No.
If a customer came to you today to build that truck, what would you quote them? Oh, well over 150, right?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I just did another truck recently, and it had half as much custom work, and that truck just went for 100. So yeah, it's one of those things, like once you compare that, it's like, well, that's where the baseline is. If you want all these extra options and luxuries that the Frank truck has, well, yeah, you're up in the 160, 170 range.
I mean, that's the value in it itself right there, man. It is an epic build. It's insane. It's wild. And I'm sure you got a lot of cool stuff coming down the pike too. What's next? What project are you talking to a customer about right now? What are you doing in the shop? What are you guys going to sell on your website? You know, what's next?
So what's next? We have two of the 1950s Dodge flat fender power wagons here. And those trucks are super iconic. They're one of my favorite vintage four-wheel drives. They also have the worst powertrain for daily driving. I don't know if you've ever drove one, but they do about 30 miles an hour on a good day.
They're essentially, I'd say even worse than a tractor. A tractor is probably, more responsive, better driving than those.
I was going to call it a glorified tractor, but you really took it down a couple notches there.
No, a tractor would probably drive a lot nicer, actually.
It's got the Power Wagon has brakes on all four wheels. That's a plus, right? even if they don't work.
Dude, buddy. That's cool. What about stuff like your custom fabricated parts on your website? Anything else you guys are doing?
Well, we've had a lot of people asking about that 3-link coilover setup we're building. And that is something that I'd really want to get out on the market. It's also a very complex setup to put together. It takes a lot of time, and I've wanted to keep testing it and putting it on vehicles. But now that we've done 3 or 4 installs, I'm really confident in how it came out. It's just finding the time to actually build them. It's a very intensive process to press break all the parts and weld and fit. I just finished making a bunch of fixtures to weld all these pieces together. So in the coming months here, once I get through a lot of the hourly jobs that we're putting some heavy work into, then I'll get back on the 3-link stuff, once the weather cools off a little bit. And I'd like to get a low production count of those 3-link kits out there for these 72 to 93 Dodge truck guys.
Yeah, that's super cool, man. I really am thankful for all the time that you spent with us today. I really appreciate it. Appreciative. I can't believe that the Green Machine Frank's truck is getting sold. But if anybody out there is interested in it, make sure you reach out to Charlie or myself, and we'll put you in contact, because that thing is a deal and a half.
So you've seen some of the Dodges I'm building. Tell me about some of the trucks you got in your garage right now.
So right now, I'll tell you exactly what I have. I have my 81 Omaha Orange CJ7 with a 4-inch suspension lift, which actually was a custom 4-inch suspension lift. People will hate on me. We did use Rough Country N2 shocks, but the leafs were actually custom made. And I have a great suspension shop right by me, probably about 2 miles away, and they made me the custom leaves. I mean, it's super cool. It's awesome. It's called, I'll give them a plug. It's R&H Spring in Wall, New Jersey. They do all my suspensions. But that's one. I also have, I just finished a, and I'm actually going to pass it on down the line to the next caretaker, a 1987 Land Rover Santana Defender 110 2500 DL. And talk about driving like a tractor. That thing drives like a tractor. Looks like $1 million driving like a tractor, but, and I actually imported that. It started its life on a nut farm in southern Spain, and I imported it here into the States. And when I got it, the thing was immaculately clean and original. Like, it's so dry in that area that, it has aluminum body, body panels, but if anybody knows, the frames, bulkheads on those things rot out. I gotta tell you, there isn't on the frame, there isn't even surface rust for a 35-year-old car. Yeah, it is.
Those things are so bad, they started remaking those frames.
Yeah,
you can buy a new galvanized frame.
You can buy brand new galvanized frames because you need them, because most people need them. I gotta tell you, this thing was just solid and original. Somebody used it, lightly on a nut farm for 35 years. When I got it, only had 135,000 kilometers, I think, which is like 83,000 miles. Yeah. So I got it, and I did it from top to bottom, inside and out. So I did a full cosmetic restoration, body work, and I painted it Arliss blue with white accents.
Nice.
So it's actually nice. Olympic white are the accents. Put the galvanized safari rack on top, a new set of heavy-duty Wolf-style steel wheels, and believe it or not, I couldn't find my go-to BFG BF Goodrich All Terrain, and they're tough to find these days with supply chain. And when you do find them, they're like $350 a pop, man.
Is that your go to tire? Is the BF Goodrich All Terrain?
It's my go to tire. I put it on all my cars, on all my trucks, all my builds. But you know what I actually ended up doing, just because I had to, was I picked up some Toyo ATs, and man, they're a great all-terrain tire, and they ride really well. Like, they have an aggressive sidewall, you know. So I might stray from my go-to tire. I'm not going to lie, and go to a Toyo. People might hate me.
I think you should, because I'm a Toyo man here. I put Toyos in everything I own. That started a few years ago when I bought my first set, and I'm hooked on them. I love them.
It's like you said, like, everything happens and it creates an opportunity. Like, oh, I couldn't get BFGs, which are an awesome tire. I love them. And then I ended up finding these Toyo All-Terrain. They're like, I love these things. They're great. And then did a full custom interior on that. I use as much marine product as I can. So there all my go. Interiors I'm doing are marine leatherette, which is the nice way to say marine vinyl. But I did like really cool Jaguar style stitch seats. So it's like a tobacco marine leatherette.
This thing's done up.
Yeah, it's wild. It's like a tobacco marine leatherette seat with blue piping and blue stitching. I even had custom cut vinyl diamond plate put in, took out all the old carpet, and found a million random hazelnuts in there. So I'm assuming it was a hazelnut farm is where I lived. It is, and I completely reconditioned the suspension. Again, back to R&H spring, reconditioned all the springs and the parabolic springs, put some old man Emu shock absorbers on there, and then reconditioned the entire powertrain, all new fluids, filters, everything from top to bottom. It doesn't have a lot of miles on it, so it did, nothing really needed to be rebuilt.
You said you're going to sell that thing?
I am going to sell it. Oh, so what I do is every year I do one project where I live, like I said, I live in a beach town. I do a one project, I buy it, I get the job done, and then I have it ready for the beginning of summer, and I drive it all summer. So that was my summer car this year, actually.
You know, that's one thing. You gotta enjoy the vehicle you build just for a little bit. So I really look forward to like the road testing of a project vehicle. When you do all these long hours, you get a chance to drive it. And I was very, very happy to be able to drive Frank's truck and put a couple thousand miles on that truck of, you know, road testing. And I really felt confident in that truck once he got it, just for reliability. But that is like the biggest reward, I think, of once you do all those long hours and dollars spent, be able to actually drive that thing for a little bit and not just have it taken out of your hands by a buyer or, you know, get shipped off to nowhere. To be able to drive it for a little bit is just amazing.
And I'll tell you, I'm just an enthusiast. Like I'm a casual enthusiast. I love doing this. It's not my job. I don't make a living off of it. You know, I have this awesome collection my problem is the only time I will pass it on down the line or sell it, which I know is a dirty word these days for a lot of people, but I'll pass it on down the line when I run out of room. So I only have like 2,500 square feet. It came inbound, and then I ended up having to redo the entire top end of the AMC 360, which is a 82 Wagoneer Limited, which is the OG Grand Wagoneer. So that's my next project. And then, you know, other projects I've done are the CJ5A, CJ8, a bunch of other stuff. But I only have three in the garage right now. I'll eventually hunt and get my next fun thing.
Well, once you can always
defenders are gone.
You could always make more space, but building up, right? Like, how are you doing on shelving units? You got stuff off the floor, because that's how I gained a lot of space in my shop.
I have shelving units inside and out, upside down. If you look at my Instagram, I just cleaned my shop last Sunday, and you can see I don't have anything on the floor, man.
I started building up.
I will tell you, you know what I, what a big space suck for my garage is, I have like a chill area where I have like hammock chairs hanging from the ceiling, butterfly chairs, like a cocktail table, yeah. All on rugs. I have a full dining room table from an old apartment I had up in the city, like a fridge, my stereo turntable.
Nice. So
that, if I got rid of that, I could add another car, but then where else would my buddies and I chill? You know,
yeah.
They call it the jam pad.
I never really saw a lot of that until I went and visited one of my customers down in Georgia and near Atlanta, in Atlanta. And they had the workshop upstairs and downstairs, and upstairs they have a nice bathroom and they have a lounge area, like leather couches and a TV, a sound system. They have a small kitchen, and I was like, you know what? This is actually really nice.
The best part of a garage is chilling in it, not just working in it, chilling.
Yeah, I'm starting to realize that.
Yeah, you need some nice big heavy leather couches, a nice rug, you know, somewhere in that shop over there.
Well, I was on this this mindset for quite a while. I was like, I don't want any couches. I don't want to sit down and relax. I want to work. So I did that for a few years now. Like, you know, it'd be nice if I had like just a nice recliner or something for a Saturday. But
I'll tell you though, after like a long day where you actually get a lot of stuff accomplished, sitting down in your garage and just looking what you got accomplished for that day is like very satisfying.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? Well, we got a shade tree in the grass, you know, underneath the shade tree. So we could park them out in the driveway and lay down in the grass and hang out there for now. That's what we do currently.
We don't, unfortunately, in the industrial area where my warehouse is, you know, it wouldn't be as nice as sitting under a shade tree up. But yeah. I mean, yeah. I could sit in front of and lay down on a pavement road with, you know, 18 wheelers going by each way. But hey, not as serene as under the shade tree.
You got to work with your surroundings. Yeah, I got you.
So, dude, I got to tell you, Charlie, I had so much fun talking to you today. You do such cool stuff for everyone out there. If you don't follow Charlie on Instagram, you got to follow him at Metal by Charlie. If you have any interest in or need custom fabricated classic Dodge truck parts, check out his website, Metal by Charlie. And I am super excited to hear that you are going to be doing those coilover suspensions. Because I think there's going to be a lot of demand for those. So
the old trucks are the new in, because the new trucks are too expensive and they're not made durable anymore. So you see a lot of guys putting a lot of money and time into these 25, 30 year old trucks now. Yeah, so that's where I want to hit on it a little harder, you know.
That's cool, man. But I can't thank you enough for joining us today, the time that you put into the podcast. And Becca, we'll plug the Green Machine. If anybody's interested in literally the most ridiculously dope 1979 D100 custom fabricated by Metal by Charlie himself, by Charlie Pitcher, it is going for, as we all said, the value price of $129, because you couldn't even build it for that, right?
You should come down here. We should collaborate on a YouTube sale video for the truck, you know.
Oh man, are you gonna have me doing TikTok dance videos? No, Charlie.
No TikTok here.
I'm a big boy. I can't do dance videos. I'm just kidding around with you. We should. And hey man, next time you're in the city, you definitely got to reach out. If you ever make it to you know, the coastal New Jersey area, please reach out. Next time I'm down by you, we're definitely going to get together. We got to cross paths.
Absolutely. Hey, have a great day, man. Thanks for the podcast time.
All right. Thanks a lot, brother. Have a good one.
You too.